Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, if we're hearing Yacht Rock, it must be Friday, and we're hoping to visit with Carolyn Fiddler a little later in the hour here. But first, welcome back to the third hour of Up North News for this Friday, October 28th. The final time that we're saying welcome to the third hour, because we go to 2 hours and two very early hours come Monday. Next time we're on the air will be 6 a.m. Monday morning. We'll be taking the 6 to 8 time slot. Our big thanks to Matt Flynn for all of his time there before he takes a little break and then picks up in the afternoons with Matt Flynn Direct. So we're thrilled to be making that move because, again, once you reach a certain age, you're up that early anyway. So I may as well get paid for doing something productive, right? I have unfortunately found a way to get my Twitter notifications alarm going rather haywire, but I suppose it's for a really good reason. And I have Sarah Yacoub to blame for it. Sarah, friend of the show, former co-host on our old Wednesday night show. She's now a candidate for state assembly over in Western Wisconsin. And she sent out a tweet that said, number one, what's your plan to vote? And number two, tag three friends. Why? Because Biden won in 2020 by 3 votes per ward. That's it. Time to kick it into gear and turn out the vote. So again, what's your plan to vote? And tag three friends. And she tagged me. And she tagged Kristen Bry, and among others. And then that, of course, left it to me to say, coincidentally, I said, number one, handed my completed absentee ballot to my town clerk today. This was yesterday. After, of course, using it to make a video tutorial for Up North News, which I actually just finished editing before the show. And so that'll be posted soon. And then I tagged three people, including our own Luke Mathers and also our friend Annalise Eicher in Sun Prairie. Well, what I didn't realize was that then, you know, Annalise was going to tag three friends and everybody else tags three friends. And just like the shampoo commercial says, and so on and so on and so on. And so every time the next person is responding about what's their plan to vote and who are their three friends. Now, on the other hand, if I were fishing for contact information, I mean, I'd be rolling in it right now in terms of new contacts and friends of friends. So I guess that should be a pretty good thing, because who doesn't love making new friends? I mean, some personally, some virtually. Someday I'm going to meet this Carolyn Fiddler face to face. But right now, virtual face to virtual face, pretty fun. Oh, wait a minute. We need the musical introduction. Go ahead and bring that up loud, Aaron. It's your favorite foreign movie. Oh, we missed it. When you know Peg, of course, Steely Dan. And you know who is saying Peg in a very high voice in the background there, right?
No.
Michael McDonald.
Yes.
And so I thought we will, of course, as always, talk about state by state politics. But as somebody who appreciates Yacht Rock almost as much as I do, I stumbled upon an article called The Best Michael McDonald Background Vocal Performances. He has been the background singer on hundreds of songs. And, you know, Peg was the one that came to mind for me, although actually he was part of Steely Dan at the time. And I wondered, this is very niche, but I thought I'd see if you had a song where you recognize that Michael McDonald is in the background and you especially like it because of that.
Well, it's not really a background thing, but my favorite sort of instance of Michael McDonald popping up in the wild is the hook on Regulate. That's from Michael
Keaton. Yeah. Hey, that works. I mean, that's as far from the spectrum as I was going to go, which was Christopher Cross. Which I was describing the old SCTV skit where he's rushing into the production studio just in time to sing "Such a Long Way to Go." You know, that's what he says in the back. While Christopher Cross talks about making it to the border with Mexico. But if you listen for this, if you don't appreciate it, between the article or just listening to enough, you know, 70s tunes, you will realize, my God, he was every place. He was on Jane.
I gotta
James
find
Ingram's,
this article.
Yamo Be There, Toto's I'll Be Over You, of course, Kenny Loggins, This Is right. It, and on and on it goes. So that was our moment of Yacht Rock Hall of Fame trivia.
I love
just
it.
In honor of you. So
oh.
How are you?
Tired. So tired.
Remember, the number changes every day, but the saying remains the same. And today's saying is, I can do anything for 11 more days.
Mm-hmm. No, I, yeah.
I don't know that we really can.
That's what I keep trying to convince myself.
We have to say it. We have to say it. That's the rule. And in your case, it's staying on top, you know, as political editorial director for Courier Newsroom and tracking the outlets and races in 8 states. Then the other 42 play a role in state house action, your newsletter that you work on each week, which I imagine is, you know, somewhere on your to-do list as well.
So. Actually, this week I got started on it, and it's just gonna have to keep for next week. I just didn't have another 14-hour day in me yesterday.
What?
I fell asleep at like 9.
All right. We'll let that one go. We will talk about after the break any themes that you were starting to work on and penciled onto a legal pad someplace before you fell asleep on it.
Absolutely.
And got either drool or wine stains on said legal pad.
It was drool.
That's all coming up after this break. You're up north.
It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warmer G was on the streets trying to consume some stuff.
See, if we can't bring just a little joy into Carolyn's life, then, you know, really what good are we? Welcome back. This is Up North News for a Friday morning. Not yet the Friday morning before Election Day, but we're getting awfully gosh darn close. And so Carolyn's joining us to talk about what's happening in other states. She's already established the fact that she did not get her homework assignment done in time this week and will not have a newsletter to share with us right now. But she has been doing some work on things that will eventually go into a newsletter. But because they're not, we like get the exclusive. We're getting first look at you know, what you didn't get done, but what you're following.
Thanks.
And again, it's a state-by-state thing. That's what you do. You look at all the states because overachiever, hashtag. And in your case, you're answering basically for all these states the question, when? You know, when this, when that, little bit of what and why and how. But mm-hmm. you started with, you know, when various things are set into motion.
Yeah. And actually, I started talking about like certification, but actually I would take it a step back further from that. And like, when can various states start counting mail-in or early or absentee ballots? And that's different across each state. And then after all the votes are counted, when are those results certified by the state? And what that means, it's like it's an official bookend to the election, but that is the point. Only after then can things like recounts happen, after those initial results are certified. So figuring out when each of these things can happen where, and you know, some states don't really provide for recounts. A candidate has to just pay for them. Some states, if it's within a certain threshold, the state will pay for it. If it's out of it, the candidate has to pay for it. It's still a little different everywhere. So fun times. And I don't pay attention to every state. I don't give a rat's bottom about Nebraska.
No?
Because it's ostensibly nonpartisan.
Oh, okay. I see. Gotcha.
And unicameral. What the hell's up with that?
Well, yeah. Well, you know what? I used to think that was the oddball. Now I'm kind of starting to wonder if maybe that's the way to go. If we just haven't invented too much gridlock for the sake of protecting certain interests in the late 1700s, if you know what I mean. Mm. So I'm not going to rain on that parade about going unicameral at this point. But anyway, getting back to the whens of something, we actually talked about this the other day about Wisconsin and absentee ballots and opening them. Again, this varies from state to state, but I had told somebody when they said, well, you know, how come we don't get results till the middle of the night? And I said, well, because in Wisconsin, you can't even open the envelopes that the absentee ballots came in mm-hmm. until 7 a.m. on election day. And then throughout the day, you know, as they get a lull in voters coming in, they can open the envelopes and feed those into the counting machines along with those of the in-person voters on election day. Well, somebody stopped me and said, well, I didn't think they could even open the envelopes till 8 o'clock after the polls close. And so I checked with my town clerk yesterday and she confirmed that I was right, that it's actually at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. But that's what people are saying, is that in some states, they actually do allow you to open up the envelopes and run the absentee ballots into the machine, you know, before election day, so that they don't cause you to have results in the middle of the night.
It's true. It prevents backlogs. And in those states where like the ballots are processed and in some cases even tallied before election day, it is like, it's an actual felony to release those results before the polls close. So fun fact, someone's sitting on some vote totals in like Florida right now. But they can't tell you what's going on because they will go to jail.
Now, and this is the thing that I have to look up, I always try to make it clear when I'm speculating, but there are municipalities in Wisconsin that use what is called a central count facility. And again, this was something that, stop me if you've heard this before, it's been used year after year after year, but only suddenly in 2020 did it seem to be a problem for some people. And that is that rather than, you know, counting them in all of a city's many precincts, the ballots are brought to a central process so that they can be run through there, again, efficiently and using automation and everything else. But of course, that transporting of ballots, you know, right away attracted suspicion. And, you know, again, people look back at all these central count facilities and everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. And the way they've been doing it for a long time. And Republicans didn't have a problem with people doing that way when, say, Scott Walker was winning the governorship. But
right. Or when Trump won the first time. And so when I talked about what am I speculating about, I thought I had heard that in that case, because you're using a central count facility, then the absentee ballots aren't opened during the day because they and all of the ballots come to a central count facility after 8 p.m. and then they're run through. I'm going to double check that. But I think that way the person I was talking to about this, I think we were both right, but just in certain ways.
Right.
But again, Carolyn, it gets to that whole notion of rules vary from state to state and from municipality to municipality.
Yeah, it's fascinating. That's one of my favorite things about focusing on state legislative stuff is that everything is so different from state to state, including like, you know, people who are like write about and cover and work on campaigns at the federal level have like one set of rules they need to follow for most things, like campaign finance stuff, like rules around certain things you can and can't do legally as a campaign. But when it comes to those state level races, you know, it's like you have 50 different DCCCs or RSCCs or whatever. Like every state has its own set of rules, laws, and personality. So it's cool.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And so one of your favorite, I would assume, go-to resources is the National Conference of State Legislatures, NCSL, for those of us who've been there. And again, we've talked about here in Wisconsin, we have the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, the Legislative Audit Bureau. They are dedicated, amazing public servants who are either nonpartisan or bipartisan, however you want to describe them. They are just the good workers that help tie things together. NCSL has traditionally played that role across the country, helping all 50 state legislatures kind of know what each other is up to. I assume that's something that you find rather valuable.
Absolutely. NCSL can be a little milquetoasty in their analysis, in my experience, when it comes to certain issues. But as a resource, they're amazing, and they have all kinds of good stuff there. Like they have a whole clearinghouse of like certification deadlines and recount rules, and just if you need to compare something broadly across states, either NCSL or Ballotpedia are two amazing resources for that stuff.
Okay. So we talked a bit about what you're working on in part for the newsletter. Are you watching over the past week? Have you watched any particular states? The automatic number one issue, of course, is Dr. Oz and John Fetterman's debate in Pennsylvania. If we set that aside for a second, has anything else been more of a highlight to you this week that told you anything about how Election Day might go?
Oh, gosh. No, I'm a huge pessimist when it comes to elections. I got my start in Virginia in the early aughts, so I'm very accustomed to things going very, very poorly all the time.
You've had all the, where they say the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Yes.
It's just gone from you, isn't it?
I mean, I had my bright spots in 17 and 19 in Virginia, and then I went 21.
You know, and that's something else about that varies from state to state. And I did a story for this a couple of weeks back about that we call it the midterms, but you know, that really makes it, it minimizes the importance of it because yeah, it's the middle of a presidential term, but the midterms are when I think it's 36 states elect governors mm-hmm. in those years. And then there's, you know, U.S. Senate races, you know, much of the time. But then there are still a couple of outliers that elect their governors in odd numbered years, Virginia mm-hmm. being one of them.
And New Jersey.
New Jersey, that's right. They're another one too. And it works both ways. There's some that, like Virginia, have their gubernatorial election 1 year after the presidential. And then there's one or two states, I think, that hold theirs like 3 years after the presidential in the odd numbered years.
Yep.
In other words, if you move from state to state, God help you. You may never know, you know, who your elected representatives are.
Yeah, in Virginia, we literally have an election every single November. It's how I mark the passage of time, is my I voted stickers.
Well, that was when I visited Texas a few times in the past year when a daughter lived there for a time. It seemed like every time we went, there were lawn signs up. There were campaign signs everywhere, no matter when we went. And I finally looked up the Texas laws, and that's when it became apparent that, yeah, basically they have spring elections pretty much every year for something and yep. fall elections almost every year for something. So it is pretty much nonstop campaign season in Texas.
Yeah, it's exhausting. Just thinking about it, especially a state as huge as Texas, right? Like Virginia is one thing. It's not a small state, but it's no Texas.
No.
A lot of elections all the time. Of course, Texas elects things that Virginia doesn't. Like Texas elects judges.
Oh my goodness. They elect so many things there.
Yes.
Yes. No, it's really true. I might even think to look that up at some point just for, well, what they call in the business content. because like agriculture commissioner and, mm-hmm. you know, things of that ilk. So what will you be doing for election night then? Will you be monitoring certain races? Will you be publishing or will you be, you know, talking to people, you know, on radio shows or what have you? What do you think in your election night's going to look like?
Well, you know, I'm not booked on anything on election night yet. I imagine I'll be getting all kinds of calls the day after. I'll be working on a in-depth roundup of all the important changes in state legislative numbers, majorities, things like that. I'll be keeping an especially close eye on places like Michigan and Pennsylvania in particular, looking for opportunities for Democrats to flip any of those chambers in those states. And I'll be keeping an eye on places like Maine and Nevada for defensive purposes. Democrats are fighting to hold on to those majorities there for sure. And it'll, you know, I'll be up very late and on Tuesday and I'll be up very early on Wednesday. And because a lot of these state legislative races are decided by 500 or fewer votes, it's going to take time to count every single vote in these races. And we won't know some of these majorities until the end of the week, at least. So,
well, and that's the thing is that, you know, everybody in this era of instant gratification, you know, is expecting that we learn everything right away. And that's just not how it works.
It's not how it's ever worked. People are acting like it's something new and different, and it's just not.
No, it's not. Let me ask you about Michigan for a sec, just because we were talking about it last hour with Mark Jacob. He was chiding national media because I forget now if it was President Biden or former President Obama or both are making stops in Michigan. And pundits are saying, oh, well, that must mean, you know, Gretchen Whitmer's comfortable lead isn't so comfortable after all. And Mark Jacob's take was, what's wrong with going to Michigan and, you know, see also Hillary Clinton, Wisconsin 2016?
Yes, that is a very good point. And also, like, these folks want to take credit for wins when they happen and where they happen.
There you go.
It's a lot easier to take credit. You're like, hey, I just showed up there like a week and a half before the election. Look what I did. So
you really know how these folks think, don't you? Yep. Right. Right.
I don't like what that says about me. Take it back.
No. You're there. Look, if we didn't like you enough already for your yacht rock ways, the politics and the cynicism about it would only seal the deal that we like you that much more. Thanks. Carolyn, thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. And then we'll do this a little earlier, but one more time next Friday.
I am looking forward to it.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
See ya. And we will continue this hour's conversation right after this. You're up north.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
All right, there's some Friday music for you as we head into the home stretch here for Up North News for this week on just another beautiful sunny morning here on Lake Wissota, where I mentioned before the lake is to the right of me. There's a cornfield to the left of me, and the combine continues to roll along and pull all the corn off of this particular field. Those combines and then the trucks that go alongside them operating well into the night and starting again very early this morning. And you know, the old saying is make hay while the sun shines. Well, the conditions for this year's harvest couldn't be better. And I think anybody that pays any attention to this knows that the last few autumns have not been especially kind with fairly persistent rain and wet conditions. And this year, I'm looking at an article from the Wisconsin State Farmer, part of the USA Today Wisconsin network, saying that only 2% of reports show that the soils are too wet to harvest crops, but that so far, in terms of harvesting the corn for grain, it's already, let's see, it's at 22% complete. It's got to be higher by now. Let's see, there's also the corn for silage harvest was 94% complete. Soybean harvest is 76% complete. The potato crop is nearly in the books. Winter wheat is emerging several days ahead of schedule. Which, by the way, if you're more of a city kid like me, and then you go visit your in-laws' farm like I did, it's sometimes a little weird to see, you know, winter wheat. You see this beautiful lush green crop growing. Meanwhile, all the corn is already, you know, dried out and waiting to be harvested. But we're seeing more of that winter wheat, especially in places that see they can get a better price for that than they can for what they were getting for dairy once upon a time before they sold off the stock. I wanted to share an article from an opinion column, I should say, that I saw in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Jeffrey Summers, a professor of political economy and public policy at UW-Milwaukee, and Luz Souza, an instructor of economics at Milwaukee Area Technical College, with the headline that, makes very clear that Tim Michels' idea for a flat tax is not a new idea. It's just a bad one. They ask, is cutting taxes for the wealthy while increasing them for the middle class and working poor a good idea? That's what Republican candidate for governor Tim Michels is proposing by resuscitating the idea of a flat tax for Wisconsin. It's either that or bankrupting state government, they write. They note how the Republican Party's first president, Abraham Lincoln, knew this in 1862. The country desperately needed revenue to develop infrastructure and defend ourselves from Confederate traitors. And so he and Congress agreed to jettison the flat tax because it was an unfair burden on the nation's workers and insufficient for raising needed revenue. So that's what brought along the Revenue Act of 1862 that left those workers untaxed while taxing better paid workers at a lower rate than the nation's wealthy. It was and remains called progressive taxation to this day. Unfortunately, after Lincoln's assassination and the end of the Civil War, the extremely wealthy once again consolidated their power and repealed the progressive income tax, and the U.S. entered the most corrupt period in our history, known as the Gilded Age, they write. The eventual growth of the union movement and the middle class around the turn of the century resulted in citizens rejecting the excess and corruption of the Gilded Age, ushering in what's called the Progressive Era. Wisconsin was the nation's leader during the progressive era and was known at the time for clean government and as the nation's laboratory of democracy. Despite feverish attempts by wealthy special interests to stop it, Wisconsin Republican Governor Francis McGovern in 1911 signed into law a progressive income tax here in Wisconsin that became a model for the entire country. There's so much deja vu already in this column, I can barely stand it. But, you know, this is a model that has been periodically attacked, the authors go on to say, by the uber wealthy, often with the flat tax as a proposed solution. It was Republican billionaire Steve Forbes, remember a few years back, proposing, championing a flat tax that would shift the tax burden to the already overtaxed middle class and working poor while handing the wealthiest citizens a great big tax cut. Following the lead of his Republican primary opponent, Rebecca Clefish, we watched as multimillionaire Tim Michaels said he is open to replacing Wisconsin's mildly graduated income tax with a flat tax. And so Jeffrey Summers and Lou Sosa go on to ask about, you know, how that would look in Wisconsin. Setting a flat tax at about 5.25% would raise the same revenue as our current tax rates, but doing so would result in a tax increase for 96.6% of Badger State taxpayers with an adjusted gross income anywhere between $20,000 and $300,000. Meanwhile, going to a flat tax, they write, would present 3.3% of tax filers who have an adjusted gross income of $500,000 and up, an estimated tax cut for that year, a tax cut of $22,280. So a revenue neutral flat tax would be a boon for Michaels and his ultra wealthy campaign funders, while everybody else would be stuck paying higher taxes to fund what is essentially welfare for the wealthy. Michaels has said that he's only interested in the flat tax if it doesn't raise taxes on anyone. Now, for that to happen, the flat tax rate would have to come all the way down to what's currently the lowest bracket, about 3.5%. Now, that would be a true windfall to the state's richest taxpayers. It would also reduce state revenue by $5.5 billion in the first year and nearly $4 billion per year after that, essentially bankrupting the state and leading, they write, to draconian cuts to state services, public safety, K-12 education, healthcare, environmental protection, the UW, the tech college system, and more. And they conclude by saying, Republicans like Lincoln and former Wisconsin Governor Francis McGovern had a better idea. Wisconsin should follow their lead of a progressive income tax rather than Michael's proposal, which would be nothing more than a huge gift to himself. Again, the deja vu there is stunning, not only because of what they wrote about earlier about the Gilded Age and the way that wealth has consolidated its power, but the deja vu comes in that we have Tim Michaels wanting to basically enrich his class by proposing this flat tax under the guise of fairness when it's everything but. Such deja vu, you know, when you look at what Ron Johnson has done to personally enrich himself during his time here in the Senate. Now, he has said, to be fair, remember that, to be fair, Johnson has said, well, yeah, I've doubled my wealth since I became a senator, but it actually should be more. But I took pretty much everything out of the stock market and put it into trusts, I believe, and such. Well, we've already heard about what those trusts have been able to do, the houses and planes that have been purchased, the properties that have been purchased, you know, in order to become income generating properties. So it's not like we should feel any sympathy for Ron Johnson. And then he pushed through that infamous 2017 corporate tax cut that personally benefited him when he sold off the plastics company that he had been handed and ran for a couple decades. And it really personally benefited the Wisconsin billionaires, Liz and Dick Eline and Diane Hendricks, who have put tens of millions of dollars of that savings into the campaign ads that are nonstop on YouTube, on TV stations, on radio stations. Anything that you see from Wisconsin Truth Pack is a pack of lies coming from these billionaires who are paying back Ron Johnson for all of the money they no longer have to pay in taxes to support the services that Wisconsin requires to educate our kids, to not have potholes in the roads, and money that you and I have to make up as a result. But again, the deja vu of the Gilded Age is that there's very little stopping them right now. Well, because of Citizens United, because of decisions made here in Wisconsin by Republicans, you know, the barn doors are open in terms of corporate cash, you know, just flooding in. I shouldn't say the barn doors, the floodgates would be a better metaphor there, you know, have been opened in terms of the cash that's pouring into ads. And there's really only one thing that can overcome that, and that's voter turnout. Voter turnout from people who have either seen the ads, are sick of them, and understand that, you know, there's a lot there that's not true or hypocritical or racist or what have you. People who've either seen those ads or people who simply reach a level of frustration with the folks that are, you know, in office, who have been controlling things in the legislature for the past 11 years, going on 12, the people who have wanted to, you know, sit in our U.S. Senate seat, in our gubernatorial seat, and elsewhere. And then they hear proposals like this about what a flat tax is. First, what they say it is, and then what it really is if it's put into play. And they say that's enough of this. Or they see something like the Dobbs decision, ripping away women's health care rights, reducing them to second-class citizens. And again, they get tired of it. Or they understand now that, you know, Medicaid is not covering certain drugs because they could be considered, you know, used in abortions, even though that's not the reason this particular woman needs that drug. But their insurance plan no longer covers that, and they're tired of it. Or they've seen people like Tim Michels say, we don't need red flag gun laws because, you know, women will just make up stories. They'll make up excuses to have their exes' hunting rifles taken away. And they'll get sick of that. And ultimately, that will drive turnout, which will become, if you missed it earlier, the tiny umbrella, or rather become the anvil that will fall upon the Coyote and the Roadrunner cartoons, even as Michels and Ron Johnson open up that tiny umbrella to cushion the blow, the tiny umbrella being that they're, you know, modifying their positions on abortion, or at least trying to. And I want to make sure I urge caution on that front, this whole notion of changing their mind or modifying their views. They're not really modifying their views. They're telling you that they're modifying what they're willing to accept. In the case of Michels, for example, it's him saying, oh, I would sign a bill that has exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother. But remember what he's talking about. What he's saying is, I would sign a bill cementing Wisconsin's ban on abortions with exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother. He would sign the bill. But what he really wants and what he would actually really get from the Wisconsin legislature would be a reinforcement of the current ban with no exceptions for rape and incest. Just think back to what Scott Walker said when he was running for re-election in 2014 about anti-union legislation, you know, given the cynical name Right to Work, when it's really the right to work for less. Scott Walker was asked, you know, if he would sign a bill, because there were Republicans talking about passing that in Wisconsin. They were really feeling their oats at the end of Scott Walker's first term. Scott Walker said that's, you know, again, he opened up the teeny tiny umbrella. He's like, that's not a priority for me. I don't think the legislature should be working on that. And then, of course, the anvil didn't fall on his head, and he did win re-election. And he saw the legislature pass that anti-union legislation almost immediately, and he signed it almost immediately, even though he had said, oh, it's not a priority, I really don't think they should be working on it. That's what you're getting now from Michels and Johnson, saying that, you know, they're willing to accept half a loaf when it comes to an abortion ban, but that's not what they would be likely to get if Republicans hold the legislature, if Republicans were to take Congress and then the White House 2 years down the road, they'll get what they actually want, which is a full-on ban with even more restrictions, probably a national ban. None of this state-to-state stuff. Remember states' rights? Wasn't that a big talk until a couple months back? Now they're saying, no, it actually should be a national ban. What had been a national right should be a national ban. So look at what they really want, not the tiny umbrella they're trying to open, hoping the anvil of voter turnout doesn't land on their head. We'll wrap up today's visit after this. You're up north. This just makes me want to get on an airplane. Changes in latitude, changes in attitude was my personal theme in 2014 when I moved to Grand Cayman to live in the Caribbean for 3 years. And it was so true. And it was a beautiful thing. It was great to go, but it's also great to come back. Love being back in Wisconsin. Just like it's been great to be here from 8 to 11, but it's going to be great to be back in early morning radio where I cut my teeth up in Rice Lake so many, many years ago. More importantly, it keeps me right next to the people to my left and right on my virtual monitor screen. I am the ham in the ham sandwich that has the white bread slices of Luke Mathers and Aaron Zomers.
Is that an insult? Is that a compliment? I don't even know where to go. Hey,
wait
with
a minute. I remember, I'm the guy that referred to me and Kirk Banks as a pile of manure from which our co-hosts.
That is true.
So for me calling you two slices of white bread, that's pretty damn good. You just better like that. That's all I'm going to say.
That's what I was asking. I was seeking clarity and you provided it. And I appreciate the compliment.
I didn't really. It was totally an insult. But if I raise my voice and yell at you, you know, that's how radio works these days.
When you put it into context and do provide that quote of you and Kirk.
That I didn't liken you to a pile of manure. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it is one step up from that. And glad that I can be here to send off the 10 o'clock hour with you, Pat, because
yes,
we've got some schedule changes going on with Civic Media, and the biggest being former President Barack Obama is going to be in town, so there's a special event on Saturday. That's the biggest thing here at Civic Media.
Oh, sure.
But the second biggest thing would be Pat Kreitlow with Up North News Radio moving from to 6 to 8 a.m. starting on Monday morning.
I've heard that, yes.
Do you already have the coffee pot program so that it's set to start percolating?
Yes, I actually do. I've had to think about how to do this because it will be me getting up, you know, an hour plus earlier than usual. And as it is, you know, my wife and I, the alarm is set for 5 o'clock every morning. Now it's going to be a little bit earlier than that for me. So I've got to figure out the right way, which floorboards not to step on because they're creaky in this house after 27 years. Where to put the coffee maker so that it's gurgling, you know, doesn't wake up anybody else. So there are plans in place. Yes.
See, and I have the added hurdle when I do wake up for my early mornings, the dog is something that, and I don't believe you have a dog, but,
not anymore. No.
That is the worst because he is the wild card factor. Kelsey, oh, yeah. If he jumps up onto the wrong side of the bed when he's back from being let outside, that could either make or break the morning. So at least you don't have that hurdle to deal with when it comes to the early morning shift that you're going to be doing on Monday.
Right. No, not anymore. We had a wonderful golden lab for 14 years. But, you know, you could set your alarm however you want. But if she was ready to go, she'd do that scratch, you know, right where her collar is. So you get this jingle, 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 jingle. And eventually one of us would cave in and let her out. But
For exactly that reason, Remy doesn't wear a collar at night. So therefore he gets to hang out collar free in the house when we let him. And we got a gorgeous fenced in yard and stuff too.
I was going to say, then you clearly have a fenced in yard because ours, you know, if we didn't have that collar on and there were a couple of times and she'd take off across the aforementioned cornfield. And it wasn't just that we'd finally have to get across an entire cornfield to get to her because she would head toward the barn that was over there. But then once she got there, Was she just going over to say hello to the cows, maybe sniff a butt or two? Oh, no, no, no. No, she had to roll around in the silage juices right outside the silo. So that was always a joy. So the collar didn't come off anymore after that.
Yeah, I can understand that. That makes plausible sense. I now have a bungee cord over one of the gates on the fence because there's a gate on each side. And Remy learned pretty quick that he's an Australian Shepherd. So he's a smart little guy. Probably too smart for his own good most days. But he found out that the latch was kind of just one of the... It's closed, but if you push on it just right, it opens. And so I had let him out into the backyard and then was looking out the front window one morning, and there he was in the front yard smelling things up there. And I had to run outside quickly and be like, what are you doing? So now there's a bungee cord on that gate because it's not as secure. But for the rest of the civic media lineup that we've got to keep an eye on outside of former President Obama coming to town tomorrow. The event coverage is going to be 3 to 6 here on Civic Media. And Pat Kreitlow moving to 6 to 8 a.m. across the network on all of the stations that you're listening to. Oh, excuse me. Not on RCO. RCO and does have its own. RCO and RCE in Richland Center do have their own. So they have a local morning program that you're going to be going head-to-head with, that Matt Flynn was going head-to-head with, Pat. So definitely... a very exciting move there. We got As Goes Wisconsin coming up after today from 11 to 2. Kristen's got a jam-packed show. She's got Tom Lochner, the executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. She's got candidate for the 88th Assembly District, Hannah Beauchampeau Pope, which I believe is that Hannah has been on your program, Pat.
Yes.
And she's going to be talking about some Halloween movie quizzes and talking about the Elon Musk takeover of Twitter. So jam-packed show for Kristen today for As Goes Wisconsin. And William Walter will be filling in for Dueling Tangents because of all the changes going on this weekend. Brian and I decided that we're going to have our fill-in host, William, be at the helm for the tangents today so that Brian and I can make sure that all of the T's are crossed and I's are dotted. And we've got everything accounted for with the changes with the lineup coming next week. Well,
but if you only have one fill-in co-host, how can it be a dueling tangent? Does he argue with himself?
Oh, Evan, our handy producer, also assists with the dueling of the tangents. Okay. So you can tune in for Dueling Tangents.
How does that work? Evan's the sweetest person in that building. He's the only sweet person in that building. You're saying that he actually takes issue with something somebody says?
Oh, yeah. He's Evan's one of those he's a little sarcastic, so sometimes he takes a page out of your book, Pat, and he likes to lather on the sarcasm with some of his tangents. So
exactly. No sarcasm. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's something that Evan uses just like you, and so Evan and William will be filling in for Dueling Tangents this afternoon. Then we got the Devil's Advocates from 4 to 6. You're going to want to tune in for that show. It's going to be the Obama Eve show with Obama coming to town tomorrow. And then Earl Ingram and the Devil's Advocates will be covering that event from 3 to 6 p.m. across Civic Media. You can listen on the app or you can tune in to your local Civic Media station to hear that special event coverage.
All right. So we're heading into the Halloween weekend. So pop quiz for both of you. What's your costume? What are you going to be?
I have no idea. I'm going to be a first-time homeowner. I'm going to be a first-time homeowner just sitting there on the driveway handing out candy for the first time. That's my...
Aaron.
The only thing I have handy is a dog suit to be Wilfred from the show Wilfred.
Nice.
Minus the Gatorade bottle bong.
Okay.
We on that family-friendly note...
That prop will not be included.
Thank you, guys. It's going to do it for our 8 to 11 show. Catch us Monday morning, 6 a.m. You can follow me online on Facebook. Search for Pat Kreitlow Up North. On Twitter and Instagram, at Pat Kreitlow. Follow our work on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, or on social media. Samantha, my dear, happy birthday on Sunday. Thank you for spending your coffee break with us. Have a great day.
Don't sleep in. Set those alarms.